John Dowdle is the Reform UK candidate for the St Albans constituency in the general election. Hello, John.
Good up. Hello there.
Hello. So tell us a little bit first about you, John.
Mm-hmm. I'm retired these days, but my last sort of full-time job was as a college lecturer in politics and business studies. I was also a GCE A-level examiner in politics and government for the former University of London board. I was elected as a councillor on Watford Council in 1995 to 1999. I served as chair of the Grants Committee in my final year and was vice chair of a number of committees, including Development Control, which of course is the planning committee for the council. I was quite involved in lots of campaigning. I was a member of the South West Harts Community Health Council, and we actually fought the plans with other councils in the South West Hertfordshire area, including St Albans, to stop the closure of Watford General and St Albans and Hemel Hempstead hospitals, and we won the campaign.
All right, so that's a bit about you. Now, if you were elected on July the 4th, what would you try and get done differently around here?
Right. I mean, there are a number of local issues. I mean, the most important one, which I have to say I think is totally bonkers, is that the Liberal Democrat-controlled St Albans District Council have got a plan to build 15,000 new properties on Greenbelt land. This is just, to my mind, insane. It doesn't, in fact, take into account all the associated infrastructure that would have to be built with that. And the important thing is that I have actually voiced this concern because I did see a copy of a letter to the council from the Environment Agency saying that they, and I quote, the Environment Agency had serious concerns about a lack of a flood risk assessment. So this could mean that if this were allowed to go ahead, not only would there be a flood risk for the new properties and the new communities thus formed, but it would also obviously have a knock-on effect to existing communities and existing properties in the St Albans area as well.
I'm assuming you wouldn't deny that there is a need for housing here, or would you?
Well, as you know, I mean, we are calling, Reform UK are calling this election the immigration election. Now, we have a situation in this country where we have largely uncontrolled immigration. I think one day last week, 1,000 people came across in boats. The day before that, it was 822. I mean, we cannot keep absorbing these many immigrants without...
Right, but let's assume, we'll come on to immigration in a moment, but let's assume when you're elected, immigration stops just for a moment. There's still quite a high demand for housing in this area. So where would you put it?
Right. Well, the first thing we will do is we will stop mass migration. Now, that...
Yeah, no, I understand that. And even if you do that, though, I'm putting it to you, there is still a very high demand for housing in this area, which isn't met. So where would you put the housing?
Well, that would be then reduced. Now, the simple answer to what you're asking is not on Greenbelt land. I think we would put it onto any brownfield sites that we can find. Possibly some of what they call greyfield sites, like car parks or something, which are no longer in use. That would be far more sensible than building it on the greenbelt land of St Albans, because people like St Albans. They like it that the way it is. They don't want, you know, to become just another suburb, a greater London suburb, which is effectively what would happen if the council has its way.
Okay, now you mentioned immigration, so your plan is to stem immigration. To what kind of level?
Well, we would say all non-essential immigration should be frozen, and this would then boost wages, protect public services, end the housing crisis, and cut crime. That's
what do you define as non-essential? Give me non-essential, or on the other hand, tell me what is essential.
All right, what's essential? I mean, we still need doctors, we still need nurses to come and be personnel within the National Health Service. On the other hand, what we will also be doing simultaneously with that is that we will write off the student loans of anyone in this country who trains as a doctor, as a nurse, or as a medical professional for over a pro rata basis over 10 years. So if they work within the NHS, at the end of 10 years, they have no student debt. It was finished. We also will be eliminating interest on student loan debt as well.
So doctors and nurses would be considered to be essential immigration. Anything else?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, things like newer industries. So people who've got, advanced IT skills, programming skills, who are fully versed in AI, you know, the industries and of tomorrow. Yes, I mean, if we don't have sufficient of those for ourselves, and yet we would want to encourage, you know, more further and higher education in that regard, then yes, we will allow a small number of people to come in each year. But basically, our stance is one in, one out. So in order for somebody to come in, somebody has to go out. That way,
who would go out? How would you make people go out?
No, we don't make people go out. People go out anyway. I mean, last year there were 1.2 million people came into this country, and about half that number went out as well.
So 600,000, if it was last year, 600,000 immigration would be fine.
It would be different to that, because the criteria on which people come into the country would be changed. At the moment, it's almost anybody can come in willy-nilly, even if they are legal.
Isn't true. It's not willy-nilly, but let's gloss over that. I get your general point that you want to get net migration to zero. What about students?
I think we've got to support the HE sector, allowing students to come in. But this question of bringing families with them, I don't think we're going to support that in future. I think if they want to come in and study in a British university and, you know, get the skills and knowledge to take back to their own countries, that's fine by us. And obviously they're paying, you know, higher fees than the average British student. Then I think that's okay, but we're not going to have this where they bring their whole families with them. You know,
it's not whole families today, is it? But let's just settle on that for a moment. That's clearly going to make studying at English universities less attractive for some people. That's probably going to damage the local economy here, isn't it? Because the University of Hertfordshire has a large proportion of overseas students and contributes quite significantly to the local economy. So what are you going to do to do something to drive growth in the local economy that's going to replace that growth and some?
Well, I mentioned earlier on that I'd been a college lecturer. I actually subsequently I took early retirement mainly to be involved in the 97 general election. My late wife, unfortunately, died in 2001 at a very early age of 49 years. And I'm sort of at a bit of a loss. And in the end, I took on a role as a manager of a local community centre. Now, the interesting thing about that was that we were not registered for VAT because our turnover was under 50,000 a year. Now, that was 13 years ago. Today, it's 90,000. Our policy, Reform UK policy, is to increase that threshold to £150,000 a year before you have to register for VAT. So therefore, if you can imagine that happening with all the small businesses across the whole country, that suddenly they're freed from the responsibility having to keep VAT records, and they can boost their turnover from under 90,000 to just under 150,000. That would be an enormous boost for growth in this country.
Well, a lot of those businesses, of course, essentially don't pay very large amounts of VAT because their costs are also VAT-able, aren't they?
No, the point is that what it would mean if they end up having to register, then they start having to keep all sorts of complex records. They've got to collect back VAT. They've got to charge VAT. If they're below that threshold, they avoid all that. So they can actually focus on growing their businesses up to perhaps a much better level. And that will then be a growth factor within the economy, which isn't there now. So that will offset any other areas where maybe there may be a slight reduction in growth.
Okay. So one of the areas where economic growth is going to be very important is your eye-catching policy to reduce NHS waiting lists to zero in England within 2 years. How are you going to do that?
Well, obviously, we're going to have to use the private sector to a degree. Plus, I think we're going to start switching the resources within the NHS from the back office to the front office, so to speak. So we think that there's too much money being wasted on middle management, for example. We want to strip that down and make it simpler and then spend the money on the nurses and the doctors and the other actual public-facing personnel to offer a better, more efficient service. But we will also use available private sector capacity to bring down the waiting lists to zero. At the same time, it will still be the case that that all care will be free at the point of delivery. That is the absolute rock standard of the NHS, and we support it 100%.
Understood. So the NHS is going to be outsourcing a lot more to the private sector. You've said you're going to put an extra £17 billion per annum into the NHS. Presumably quite a sizable chunk of that money is going to go out to private businesses then.
Well, look, let's be blunt. Let's be honest. I mean, large parts of the NHS are semi-privatised now. I mean, the NHS now is a badge. It's a label. Lots of things... Lots of the facilities. I mean, for example, I've had two cataract operations. This is done by a private clinic in a shopping centre, and there are a lot. You know, there's lots of this going on.
Nevertheless, there's private enterprise out there that you've said you're going to use. They are private companies, so they're not going to just be sat there with loads of spare capacity. That's not how private companies work. So quite a lot of that £17 billion a year is going to have to go out to those private companies for additional capacity, isn't it?
Yeah, there are also third sector organisations as well, which are not solely profit driven. But yes, but the point is that we've got to reduce the waiting lists down to zero.
That's understood. When you start spending that money with private health providers, they are going to want to go and recruit staff because they won't have enough staff to get the NHS waiting lists down in 2 years. So where are they going to recruit those staff from? They're either going to recruit them from immigration or they're going to recruit them from the NHS, which is very attractive for NHS workers because they'll be paid more. So there'll be fewer people in the NHS, won't there?
Well, yes, that will need to be balanced out. But the other side to it is...
How?
Well, the other side to it is that we will be encouraging young people to go into, as I said before, with the question of the student grant being written off over 10 years, we will be...
Understood. But that doesn't happen in 2 years, does it? You know, John, that it takes more than 10 years to train as a doctor and more than 4 to train as a nurse.
Yeah, but the other problem that we've got at the moment, I mean, we frankly don't understand why this is, to be honest with you, but they've set caps on the number of trainee doctors. And no, the
understood,
number of
understood, understood. Well, but none of those things are going to feed in the next 2 years, are they? If you remove the caps on people entering medical school, that's going to take 10 years to feed through.
Yeah, there we may have to bring in doctors from outside, from other countries. Which is what's happening at the present time. So we may have to do that temporarily for them to take up the demand curve, if you like. That's the only way I can see us doing it, to be honest. I think we're going to have to bring people from overseas. But once we've got them down to zero, then they can stay or they can go. You know, it's up to them.
Right. OK, so let's talk about the environment, because your party's policies on the environment are quite different as well. Give us a pen sketch of them.
Well, our pen sketch is this. I mean, I don't know if you saw my contribution to the hustings event at St. Albans Cathedral. I said to the audience there, look, let's get real. I mean, we're all beating ourselves up, over the environment and global warming and climate change. The reality is that this country contributes less than 1% per annum in carbon dioxide emissions. Countries like China and India are building coal-fired power stations on an almost weekly basis.
They're partly doing that because they're manufacturing stuff that we're importing. So we've exported our carbon footprint, haven't we?
Yeah, no, this is way higher than that.
Of course, they're also doing it for other countries who've exported their carbon footprint. But the fact of the matter is, if you take into account things that are made for us elsewhere, our carbon footprint is not 1%, is it? But you're saying, well, because it's 1%, we really shouldn't be doing anything.
Well, we can't do anything. I mean, what is there to do? Less than 1%.
Well, I could give you a few examples. Would you like to see people insulating their houses? Would you like to see them putting solar panels on rooftops?
Yes, I mean, because they're doing that already, aren't they? I mean, I agree with you.
Not in very large numbers, no.
No, because again, the other thing that we want to do is to actually reduce energy prices and keep them down. Then perhaps people can afford to do that. But these things like these, what do you call it?
It's pretty counterintuitive, isn't it? I mean, if you reduce energy prices, the incentive to insulate your house or put solar panels on the roof is lower, isn't it?
Yeah, but insulating the house will also mean that it's warmer and drier, at all times of the year. So it's in the interest of, and then people will have the money to afford to do it. At the moment, they probably find it more difficult to do that because of high energy prices. So we say tackle the energy prices, and then people have got more money in their own pockets. They can do things like, as you point out, insulation and things like double, treble glazing. They can put solar panels on their roof. They can begin
to reduce. How will you reduce energy prices when we consume things that essentially have a global price, oil and gas?
Yeah, but we will scrap the energy levies and the net zero programs. That will slash energy bills, and it will save each household around £500 a year. So they can use that £500 savings to then get better insulation in their homes and take other measures to make their homes cleaner, warmer and drier.
All right. Well, John, if you win on July the 4th, what piece of music or song will you be dancing around the kitchen to?
Things can only get better.
John Dowdle, the Reform UK candidate for the St Albans constituency, thank you for being with us.
Okay, thank you, Nick.